So bootstrapping a company.
Yeah.
I call it that.
I did that too.
Bootstrap until the wheels fall off, until capital and cash flows become a problem. It is registering the name. Think of the name. Big advice is don't attach it to yourself if you would like that. That's why I immediately called it Amplified. After registering, you then have to ensure that a SARS and your bank account, your business bank account. And a tip, your business bank account is not your money as your founder. Pay yourself a salary every month, no matter how low it is. But those are two separate things.
Separate your financial things as soon as possible.
But run all the costs under your business bank account, every cost. But yeah, they sit separately.
Creatives who live their art deserve to be heard. This is the philosophy behind Creative Allies, a podcast from the V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program. For these conversations, we invite experienced creatives to share their stories as a gesture of allyship to emerging creatives, lending their support, advice, and encouragement. Hi, I'm your host, Lerato Sokulu.
And I'm your other host, Carol Williams.
Hello, Carol.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
So good, thanks. How are you?
I am fabulous. So today is quite an important conversation. We're talking about the creative's guide to getting paid.
Very important, because creative endeavors are great, but getting paid, very important.
Yeah, I was watching a famous actress who one would think, you know, has made it because she's on all the streaming platforms. And she was saying on this other podcast that she hasn't been working for a year. And as a result, she's had to sell her home, sell her car. And it was quite shocking to hear, because it's not only on a South African level, but even globally, like blockbuster film actors are saying the same thing. So where's the disconnect? You know?
Absolutely. And kind of the practicalities, I think, especially when you're starting out, they can feel so overwhelming. And generally, you probably have spent a lot of time working on your craft. But maybe not as much time working on your business acumen. And so how do you go about developing those skills as well? Because the good news is that they are skills. It's not just something that you're supposed to know. It's something that you can learn. And I think that is what I'm really excited to dig into today.
And it all starts with that word that we all hate as creatives. Admin, 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 admin. The backbone.
There you go. And you know what? If you're a creative listening to this and you like admin, good for you also.
I'm surprisingly good at other people's admin.
Okay, but your own?
Not my own. It just seems so tedious. I'm just like, oh, do I have to do this? But I also learned that I'm actually not a great negotiator, which I actually need someone to handle the contractual process for me, because I'm very emotional and I'll tell you like it is. And I think there's a certain decorum when, when dealing
like
with
ways
those
of
things.
Doing these things.
And, you know, people also hide things in contracts. And a lot of people are now using ChatGPT as a lawyer. You know,
it's wild out there.
It's just crazy. So that's exactly what we're talking about. Knowing what to look out for when it comes to a contract, your tax, your intellectual property, because all these things are essential in making your career and actually getting what you deserve.
Absolutely.
So what are all the elements to put into place to ensure you get paid and paid fairly at the end of the day?
Very important topic.
Fairly.
Fairly. Yeah, because I think parts of the creative industry are pretty well regulated in terms of like expectations around payment. And then there are others that are less so. So it's kind of, how do you figure that out for yourself?
To find out more from some experienced creatives, we've invited PR entrepreneur Siki Msuseni and animation and game director Richard Bolland to share their stories and advice. Siki, you're a founder, or rather the founder, of Amplified PR, with a degree in management and fashion and a postgrad diploma in marketing. You've worked on campaigns that have been shortlisted for the Lurys.
Is that me?
Yeah. That is you, girl. That is you.
Amazing.
You've also been named the rising star at Connected Women Awards in 2022 for helping to upskill other young women in digital marketing skills. Snap, snap.
Yeah. Mm.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, ladies, for having us. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
Yes.
Richard, you are one of three directors at Studio Bow, an animation and indie game development studio that produces animations and games for clients all around the world. You have a BA from Vega, where you returned to lecture for a while. You also founded New Hope SA, which aims to create long-term sustainable pathways out of homelessness. We're thrilled to have you.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, so good to be here.
Welcome.
Pleasure.
Richard, I'll start with you. Let's start with your early career. Actually, even before you started your career, how did you discover, because animation is niche, how did you discover that that was your thing? And how did you go about telling your parents that, you know, I want to be an animator?
Right. So this is a bit of a strange story, but I was about 14 years old, standing outside my school, waiting for my parents to pick me up. And this person came to me and said, do you want to be on a girl's trading card? And now you're wondering, where the hell am I going with this? How do I get to...
Was it Stranger Danger?
How do I get to being an animator? But anyway, I of course, you know, wanted to be on a girl's trading card. And so I said yes. And they gave me this form to fill out. And one of the lines on the form was, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because this is important to girls, you know, who's showing interest and who are trading your cards. They want to see... They're looking for lawyer. They're looking for doctor. They're looking for engineer.
Yeah.
But I really like drawing cartoons and drawing things and animating them when I was younger. So I put down basically animator on that. And that was my destiny. Wow. I kind of had to be true to myself for the rest of my life.
You manifested it.
Because I'd put it down on a girl's trading card when I was 14 years old. And so
no changing your mind.
I stuck to it, yeah. And I didn't look back.
Let's just take it back there. What is a girl's trading card?
Mm. All right.
I need to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're my age and you are, you know, in the early 2000s and... You know, the internet is not really a huge thing right now in South Africa, at least. You still had CNA, right? I don't know if CNA is still going, but you had all these magazines.
Maybe
PNA. Yeah.
And you could buy these magazines, and some of these magazines came with like basically like consumables, you know, like little trading cards or figurines or whatever. And there was this magazine called Boy Mad. And by the way, I've got a face for radio. I don't know why they
you were the chosen one.
I think they needed some ugly mugs to make the good looking ones kind of more attractive. And so I was one of the ugly guys that they picked. And so, you know, I'm like that super common card that you always get in your pack and you're looking for the rares. So that's what it was. It was like and I think it lasted about a year. And then obviously no one was buying.
Because you're matchmaking 14-year-olds.
It's like a lot of follow-up questions.
Okay. Look, we've derailed this conversation.
I know. My bad. Okay, let's come back.
But that's when you knew.
I knew from 14 that I wanted to be an animator. Yeah.
Wow. That is. Yeah. And so how then, skip to now you're in matric. What are your options? How do you find the right school to go to? Because sometimes that information is not readily available.
Yeah. So my best friend was really smart and he got a full scholarship to go to Vega. And, you know, if you remember my bio that was read out earlier, you'd know that that's where I ended up.
Yeah.
But because he was going there and because Vega offered like a tiny module of 2D animation in their kind of curriculum. I didn't want to go into 3D animation because a lot of my friends who were into animation went to the animation school. They did 3D animation. I wanted to do 2D animation. And because my friend Ryan was going, I thought, you know, I might as well go there. My parents had like, they had saved up enough money, which they thought would get me through the entire varsity basically it only paid for the first year,
yeah.
which I'm extremely grateful for and recognize the privilege in that. But they also said to me, Richard, you are paying for the other years yourself. You know? So you need to make this decision.
You pick this.
You can go to UCT and study a BA for like 3 years there, or you can go to Vega and we'll pay for the first year, but then you're on your own. And so, yeah, I took a student loan out and went there.
What is it with parents and BAs? My goodness. That is really interesting because obviously schools like Vega are also fairly new. You know, they don't have the long history that your UCTs and WITS universities have. And I think when you are wanting to be an animator and then you find out the cost of this dream that you have, it can be disheartening because the truth is not a lot of families, especially South African families, can afford to take their kids. And so now you have a student loan. Siki.
Yes. Hi.
Tell us about your early days, Siki in matric. What were you interested in and what led you? Because you first took the fashion route, which is not where you are now. Yeah. So tell us a bit about that.
Jeez, it really feels like I've lived 9 lives.
Yeah.
So in high school, I was always in detention, and it wasn't because I had the wrong uniform on.
Yeah.
It was because I was always speaking. I'm speaking in assembly. I am speaking in the classroom. But came matric, I went in a trolley to my matric ball.
And as one does.
Yes, you know, I was so creative. This big personality.
Who pushed the trolley?
Yeah.
I need more details.
My sister actually pushed me in a trolley. You know, everyone is in a limousine, in a Hummer, all these fashionable cars. So sure. I had decided that I am going to go to my matric ball in a trolley.
Yeah.
Told my English teacher, who was the only teacher in the school who kind of like understood who I am.
God bless her.
Yes. Gave me, you know, all the books to read. I was quite an inquisitive mind. And they were like, why don't you pitch this to the Cape Argus, the week in Argus, and tell them that you are going to your matric ball.
Wow.
That was my first experience of media relations, of what I currently do now.
Wow.
The journey has been a journey of trial and error. Started in fashion. I actually dropped out of interior design in my third year.
You got quite far.
Yes. Dropped out in my third year, and I was being mentored by architects. So I was like on a path.
Already. And it's quite a serious degree.
Yes, it was. Mm. And I was like, I really don't like this. I want to be in a more creative space. Mm. And they gave me my well wishes, and I really went into then fashion management, retail management. And then this just comes to show that I was doing what I loved, because I graduated with cum laude in my undergrad.
Yeah.
And I'm a very competitive person, and I'm competitive with myself.
Yeah.
So then I was like, I'm not going to go to the world of work. On the side, I was actually doing my blog, blogging on the side in the early days of blogging before influencers were influencers. So blogging on the side. So that whole PR agency sending me their press releases was like all around me. Wanted to be a stylist. I was in the fashion space, got to be a fashion stylist for commercials, digital campaigns. I remember my first one was with a beverage brand, and it has just been a journey of trial and error, being inquisitive and evolving since then.
But also following your heart. It's so hard to be honest with yourself sometimes because you have this idea that you want to be this thing. And then when you get there, you realize that maybe this is not the creative path that I want to take. But especially, you know, if you've gone up to third year, how then do you tell?
Like I shouldn't drop out. Yeah, I need to like finish this thing.
It can feel jarring to be like, oh my word, have I wasted my time? What am I doing? Am I really?
All that money.
And I suppose creativity is just about that. It's first a leap of faith because you really don't know how it's going to end up. But there's something in you that's always propelling you in the right direction.
That's
but you have
so
to
true.
Listen
Gotta
to
listen.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Richard, so now you're qualified. Tell us about the challenges entering the workspace.
Yeah, I think I was once again in quite a privileged position where I finished the top of my class. And so I never had too much of a problem trying to find work. In our final kind of graduation showcase, I was approached by a company and said, you know, we would like you to come work for us. So I didn't even experience what it was like to look for work. It was straight from varsity, straight into work. But it was a huge wake-up call because my first job, I just sucked at. I think this company, it was a visual effects house, like, which kind of they wanted to introduce more kind of animation into their work. And I was just terrible. I was like a junior. I didn't know what I was doing. The real world was so different from the world of varsity.
And it's like quite a jarring transition.
Yeah, a big transition. And I was up against people, colleagues of mine who the like closest colleague gap to me was like someone who is like 10 years experience. And so I just kind of continued to let down like everyone on the team all the time.
What was when you say you weren't adjusting well, what was it? Was it the 9 to 5? Was it the amount of work that you had?
I think it was the quality of work. Like I came from being the top of my class and really thinking that I was like kind of
the ish.
Yeah, like I've always like tried to not let my ego get too ahead of myself. And so I knew that like the real world was going to be tough, but I didn't realize it was going to be like that tough. And I came in maybe a little bit like chest puffed up and like, you know, this is going to be a walk in the park. And then it was terrible. I mean, I made so many mistakes. I did, they essentially after like a couple of weeks just put me on like absolute dog work because it was the safest way of like not letting me stuff up. And, and I think I was getting paid 5,000 rand a month at the time, which was a lot of money for me back then. And it was like, I was still living with my folks. So I was pretty much all disposable income.
Yeah.
And my parents were like, after 6 months, they were like, okay, we're going to start charging you rent. And so then I knew the clock was ticking. And then eventually I kept doing creative stuff on the side because I knew that they were giving me like absolute dog work and it was not creatively fulfilling. So I kept on doing like music videos and projects with friends on the side. And essentially that's what led me to my next step in the career.
I find that so interesting that you graduated cum laude and, you know, you walk out there thinking that already you're an animator, but in the real world, you probably still have to pay your dues and learn how companies operate because it's not only your skill anymore. It's a whole machine that has to work together and there has to be some sort of return on investment and they have to actually make money, which means that, you know, it's not just... You're just a cog in...
Yeah, you're like in this big machine.
Yeah.
And also I think in like in university or colleges or whatever, the focus is on doing creative work. Whereas when you get into the working world, that isn't always the focus.
Yeah.
And I think that can also be quite hard because you had to be so conceptual in your training. And now it's like you need to be conceptual, but in quite a specific way.
That's exactly what happened. Like I... Because I was studying a multimedia like undergrad, there was this like I was doing websites and back then it was in Flash, and then I was doing videos and music and like audio experiences and like interactive experiences and a whole bunch of like super creative like different stuff. And then when you go into the working world, you're not operating on that like super spread out level anymore. And because I loved creating and I loved doing lots of like fun little projects, varsity was great because every 3 weeks you got something new.
Yeah.
And then in the working world, it's like, oh, you're going to be working on this project for the next 3 months and you're just going to be rotoscoping for 3 months, which is essentially like cutting out pieces of footage frame by frame. And so I learned a lot. I learned an incredible lot. I had amazing colleagues who were like super friendly and welcoming to me, but my bosses didn't really like me.
You had to learn the hard way. And I think that's what's maybe missing in tertiary institutions is that yes, they equip you with the skills that you're going into your field, but there's life skills that you really need. And as creatives especially, you know, learning that, you know, it's not all fun and games. You are doing fun work, but actually this is a business. And so I feel like if they also start introducing, you know, things about tax and contracts and actually what does it mean to work at a creative company? Because it's quite different than schools. Siki, so you have your hand in a lot of pies and then you decide one day that, you know what, I'm going to start a company.
Yes.
How does that come about?
I am in my postgrad year, I get an opportunity to work for an award-winning advertising agency.
Mm.
I work there for about 12 months, and it's the graduate program. And I had compromised because I came in a junior role with the expectation that, you know, promotion's going to happen quite quick.
Yeah.
Because I do have previous experience before being in the advertising agency. It goes well. It's great. 8 months in, I kind of like shift my mind. I'm like, I sit with my manager at the time, and I had just read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week. So I'm looking for location independence. I'm looking for time, you know.
Mm.
So I'm like, is there any possibility? This is like 2018, yeah. Is there any possibility that I can work from, you know, have flexibility one day I'm out of office before COVID? Oh my God,
yeah, this is like very out
and,
there.
And I'm in a junior role. And the company culture is always pushed to the juniors to like create something.
Mm.
So, but anyway, and then they're like, no, Siggy. And I was like, okay, cool. Let me just plan my exit strategy here. 8 months in. On top of the fact that I just don't like the idea of clocking in at 9 and leaving at 5.
Yeah.
Quite of a radical mind. Mm. And then I just say, you know what? This is my umpteenth job. Let me just go start my own thing. I've been trained. I have great mentors around me, my line manager being one of them. Let me just start an agency. And it was at the introduction of influencer marketing. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let's bring in PR, let's bring in influencer marketing. Given my experience of creating and working with creatives, a great visual artist had called me to manage them. So I was like, okay, all these opportunities are coming my way, and I'm supplementing my salary because it's not enough by doing freelance work. So I'm like, if I can double down on this and formalize it, let me go start Amplified PR.
Yeah.
And the intention is to amplify brands. The intention is to amplify African voices to a global scale. So I call my friend. I'm like, can you just do a logo for me? And then she did. It's a graphic designer friend. And I did a lot of free work for friends, for beauty brands, for people who are at the brink of the come up.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to just come in there so we all just grow together and all just blossom.
Yeah.
And that was my creating that portfolio. But at some point, I got stuck in the portfolio space. I'm creating case studies so I can present it to the ideal clients. Yeah, and it's been the start.
I want to touch on formalizing it, because starting a company sounds great, but actually there's a lot that goes on into the company. And especially if you're doing work for free, you know, you need BEE certificates, you need tax certificates, you need a bank account, you need so many things. Where did you get all that information? And was it something you immediately did when you had the idea of starting the company? Or did someone say, hey, what's your tax number?
Are you registered? Yeah. CIPC.
Because I was a freelancer, it was an easy, you know, move from being a freelancer. Because I would do freelance work and people said, no, formalize it into a company. The tax then sits differently than you being a freelancer. And then I quickly learned that. But the beauty about me is that I usually ask people that are 3 steps ahead of me or 10 steps ahead of me. I get to have mentors or people guiding me who are at different levels. You know, someone who is 1 step ahead of me, who just registered. Let me ask them. So how it came about was, I've just left. It's my last salary. 12,500. I remember my salary.
Sure.
Rent had to come out of there. My very social life had to come out of there. The entertainment budget needed to be there. Mm. And I wasn't living at home, you know, so groceries, all of that. And I had to just like spreadsheet everything.
Mm.
I remember registering my business. And a highlight was that I used to consume a lot of content. And I had just watched a YouTube of an entrepreneur who got screwed over by their accountant. Mm. Yes, there was submitting tax. And they were like, rather have two, an accountant and an auditor, someone who looks at what they're doing.
Mm.
So like double down on that thing. And I always never wanted to be on the wrong side of the law.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you
money.
You have sauce. To. And yes. And it's like you can't plead ignorance. Like yeah. You actually yeah. have to.
Jail.
Yeah.
So it's just yeah. been that. And I opened an Instagram account, posted my logo. I was like, hey, this is something new I've started. And the congratulations come, and then you realize that maybe the announcements don't need to happen. Do the work.
Mm. Yes. Oh, that's so the good. Work.
And we are in a culture where it's a performance-based culture. Mm. Everybody just wants to be congratulated.
Yeah.
Everyone's just like, oh, I'm doing this. Congratulations. Oh, girl, you're doing so good. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then it's like, but where's the work?
Yeah. Mm.
Where is the work? Mm-hmm. Richard, you also founded your own studio. How did that come about and how did you fund it?
Yeah, it's a great question. I left that job that I was talking about earlier and I joined another guy who was starting his own studio. And so I learned a lot from him. We were like the two first people. He was the founder, but I was coming in. And so I saw him and how he kind of started his business and grew it and that type of thing. So it was great from that perspective. Same as kind of like a mentor side of things. Like I learned a lot. And then I actually worked for my church after that for like 11 months as kind of like an interim. I left that company and I wanted to do my own thing. Didn't really know what to do. So went to go work for my church at the time. And that was, I just started freelancing then as well. Like while working for my church. And I'm sure, you know, churches probably don't pay a lot of money.
I've been a receptionist at church. Yeah, I used to get paid 5,000 rand.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Wow.
And so I knew I had to freelance on the side. By now, my parents would kick me out of my house and, or not my house, their house.
this sounds really rude. Yeah. Yeah.
Kick me out of their house.
It was your house. Yeah. It was.
And so I was living on my own in Diggs's and that type of thing. I still had no like big commitments besides for like rent and, you know, petrol and stuff like that. But yeah, I started freelancing and it went really well. I started putting myself out there that I'm an animator, I can do work on the side. And eventually I was earning more money freelancing than I was from my salary. And I figured, no independence, no big, you know, kind of, which is a very privileged state to be in. And I was young still. I was like in my early 20s. So it was at the time where, you know, you need to be taking risks, I think, a little bit. Or you can afford to take risks at that time. And so I took it and I started my own studio then. I basically just announced to the world that like I was starting the studio. Like, please give me.
Without the portfolio.
Yeah. Well, I had like all of my freelance kind of portfolio. I'd asked my previous employers if I could use the work that like was just my work in it and credit them, of course. And they were all fine with it. And it went so well on the launch that I couldn't cope with how much work was coming in. And so I then made that decision of like, okay, I need to actually start a proper company and hire someone.
Formalize it.
Because I wasn't going to try to hire someone without like a company behind it. Otherwise it gets like super messy when you trying to employ someone as a friend or something like that.
No. There's so many things you touched on there, which I think before we go to the next question are important to speak about when starting a company. Siki, can you just give us a basic rundown of a point-by-point kind of method of when you start a company, what is the first thing you do? What's the second thing you do? Maybe like 5 points to just, you know, get, and what do you need to consider when you go to register at a bank?
Yeah. Yeah. So bootstrapping a company.
Yeah.
I call it that.
I did that too.
Bootstrap until the wheels fall off, until capital and cash flows become a problem. It is registering the name. Think of the name. Big advice is don't attach it to yourself if you would like that. That's why I immediately called it Amplified. After registering, you then have to ensure that a SARS and your bank account, your business bank account, and a tip. Your business bank account is not your money as your founder. Mm. Pay yourself a salary every month, no matter how low it is. But those are two separate things.
Separate your financial things as soon as possible.
Yes. Mm. But run all the costs under your business bank account, every cost. But yeah, they sit separately. Guys, that branding is important.
Mm.
Get a graphic designer to do a logo for you. If you can afford branding identity, that would be lovely. Open an Instagram account. Open a LinkedIn account.
Mm.
Have digital footprint. I still don't have a website, but I've made great revenue like businesses that have a website.
Mm.
The reason why I still don't have a website is because I'm a perfectionist. So web developers have approached me. I just want to put the right thing on my website.
Mm.
But it's okay to just have a template website.
Yeah.
To just show your work when people, because we sit in meetings and boardrooms and we Google, who is this Amplified girl? And literally they Google you.
Your website.
What is the article that's written about you? Mm. That's the PR element.
Mm-hmm.
But also, what's your social media footprint and your website?
Mm.
What else? Portfolio, like in a PDF form, less than 20 pages. Don't like write everything in there.
Mm.
But your services need to be on there and who you are and the business.
And how much it costs.
Yeah. And you can send your portfolio, like really as a PDF. That's where the branding identity comes in, to just WhatsApp, you know, like compress it so that on WhatsApp, someone can just open. We're now on our digital screens. So just, portfolio.
This is a question for both of you. So I've just started a business and I need an auditor. I need an accountant. I need a lawyer. I don't have the money to pay these people. Yeah. Then what do I do? Do I just not have these things in place? Or
I think like when I first started, I'd saved up about 30,000 rand from freelancing to start this business with.
Mm.
So it wasn't like it might sound still even today like a lot of money, but you know, you can't really operate a business for like a whole year on that. You have to find like so much creative ways to try and curtail it. And at the time I also needed an accountant and stuff like that. I failed accounting in high school. Like I knew
this I'd be not going your to strong point.
I'd go to jail if I tried to do my own accounting. Yeah. And a friend of mine at the same time was starting his own accounting practice and was kind of looking for clients that you know, could pay him a very small fee just to get things up and running.
Yeah.
And I do think so much about business is about luck. Like, and it's kind of a perfected luck in the sense of there's that Gary Player quote of the more I practice, the luckier I get. So there's a little bit of that where you have to practice your luck, but it still requires luck. And my lucky break was at the time a friend was starting an accounting practice and I could get a very cheap costing from him. Like I think it was like $2,000 a month and he would take care of all my accounting. So you need to try find those type of connections. Mm. Like that's why sometimes like often parents phone me up and say, should my kid go to animation school or should they just teach themselves? And I often skirt between like your animation school would be great for the networks that you make. Like if your kid has got a lot of friends, then like they can teach themselves. If he doesn't or she doesn't, like go study because you want to make your connections and you want to find that. And one other thing I want to say about like the tax and bank side of things is like you don't have to worry about getting VAT registered until you're making 1 million rand a year.
Yeah.
So like you might think to yourself, oh, geez, it's so much admin and it's so difficult and I'll never. If you're starting, most of us in our first year are not making 1 million rand a year. And so there's so many things that you don't have to worry about when you're starting a business. Like don't be super scared or overwhelmed by starting a business.
It happens as you're going.
It's a lot easier than you think it is.
Something I also did when I started was to do trade exchanges. So I also didn't have money to pay for a logo. But I write music as one of the things. And a friend of mine was a graphic designer. She's actually also been a guest on here, Ali Harris. So she did my logo and like a proper branding kit. And they needed some music for a short film they were doing for their business. And I wrote that. And that was a fantastic way to kind of build that out. So trade exchanges are also a great way.
So basically network across. It's collaboration.
And also like you're not going to know. And so rather have conversations with people. I also always say like invest if you can in a business coach. someone who's used to working with startups. And again, there are people who don't charge an arm and a leg, but they know these things.
Yeah.
And that was like a big game changer for me. I think.
There is help.
Yeah, there is help. Yeah, you don't know, and you're not going to know it all. Just, like, yeah. There's no way. Yeah.
Just to add on that, it's also the lower hanging fruits are recent graduates. Mm. You know, the accountants, the graphic designers go to open days at school, the graduation days at the end of the year. They have like a graduation day and go find the talent there. Yeah.
Amazing. Speaking about legal contracts, Siki, your agency has landed a big fish client in Pepkor, the owner of Pep and Ackermans. Can we get a ba 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 ba?
I love how obedient everyone is in doing the snaps.
What have you learned in this process without, of course, divulging, you know, the secrets of it, about the legal side of the contracts? Because it's quite a big account, I can imagine. Mm. And to see that number as a new business can be kind of, oh my gosh, I've made it. And then you don't read the fine print and you just sign.
Yeah.
What are some of the processes that maybe took you aback, or how did you learn to sit at the table with this big company and negotiate this contract?
Okay. Firstly, you get the figure and then you immediately need to snap out of it because that comes with the responsibility of it.
Yeah.
So yes, it's a big number, but it's more like, firstly, I need cash flows for this. Suppliers need to be paid. At first, let's speak on the contractual side of things. I immediately had to learn that an NDA is not enough. It's not the binding contract. Oh, okay, intellectual property is going to be shared amongst this. This is the working relationship. And then they give you the contract. You also need to have your contract. A service level agreement, yes, but you need to have your own terms. And once you get a big conglomerate like that, you always think that they should take the lead, but you also have your own terms. A lesson I learned of having that client is that there's going to be a time where you submit the report, but you also have to enter industry awards shows. You need to go back and go get your permission, you know, no matter how that working relationship did not do well, but you've delivered on those results. They need to give you permission. Then you have to put that as the onset before you build the campaign for the client that, hey, we actually want to be recognized in our industry. It also puts you on the map that you are doing creative work. So the legalities of it came from the fact that we're a small agency, we are supplying you with our services, but also the legalities is that I had to put a team together. I used to be a one-man show, my mother's kitchen and just kitchen counter, and I've got my laptop out and I'm doing everything. But now I have to put a team together. There are contracts in place with that team. There are contracts in place with influencers, the suppliers that are going to hold this campaign together and we deliver at the end of the day.
So, and did you get legal advice on those?
Yes. So my dad's an advocate.
Amazing. Lovely, lovely.
That works out well.
Daddy. So, and he's at the Cape Bar. So he's got like a team also that I can consult and be like, yes, I've ChatGPT'd and asked ChatGPT that, what's this?
Yeah.
You know, what should I look out for in this contract? But they all sit with you. And big clients like that, they want to work with black owned, you know, agencies with that BE certification and all. So just putting those terms in place also.
I like what you said about having your own terms, because often when you eventually land that big contract, you're so blindsided by the number. I like the first point you made, which is like, get over it quickly and get into actually there's costs that come with this number. So it's already slashed by half. But going into a contract, you also need to have your own terms for the company. I think a lot of people don't know that they can have their own terms, that they're allowed. Especially a company as big as your Ackermans and the likes, you know. You're thinking, oh my word, they've been in business for so long. I'm just starting out. And you almost make the mistake of thinking that they're helping you.
Yes.
Instead of
like, I'm so grateful and I'll just be like, okay, to everything.
Yes, ma'am, and everything.
Whereas actually you're providing a service.
Yeah.
And that service costs this much because you've actually been doing this, you know, for however long you've been doing, you have, you know, like Richard, you have this freelance work and you've actually been doing this and it's a service.
Yeah.
I like that point.
You also have to, like, the things that you can do to protect yourselves in your kind of service agreement are like limiting the number of reverts that you'll do on a specific, like, most people in the creative industry, there's always going to be a back and forth.
Yeah.
Very solemnly will you, like, do something, hand it over, and the job is done. There's going to be back and forth that the client wants to change this. You have to protect yourself. So I think most industries have a standard of, like, 3 reverts per part of the project. So, like, for us, it's like you can only do 3 sets of changes to the storyboards, 3 sets of changes to the script, 3 sets of changes to the animation, and then we're going to have to start building you. Because clients will take advantage of you. And unfortunately, it's like if you're not protecting yourself, they see that as an opportunity to gain for free. You know, and unfortunately, we live in a world where people will take advantage of you if you don't protect yourself.
Just on that point, for someone who doesn't know what a revert is, what is a revert?
A set of changes. So if, like, say I draw... doing a commercial for soap, and there's a woman washing her hands, and they're like, "Oh, we actually want a man to wash like their hands, not a woman." And then they're like, "Oh, we actually want the man to be a lot older. Oh, we actually want the man to have nail polish on." And, like, you know, you could be back and forth this whole time, and you need to protect yourself that, like, the client's only allowed to do 3 of those changes before it becomes like they have to pay for it.
Pay for it again,
Yeah, lovely.
So good.
Siki, your LinkedIn banner image says, "Discipline beats talent, consistency beats talent." Please expand on this pressureful statement.
Yeah, guys, we live in an age where we've been forced to separate the art from the artist. We also live in an age where there's a neglect of, you know, when you're so talented, you think you don't have to wake up and actually refine your craft every day. Discipline is the fact that you need to be disciplined in all aspects of your life. Too much of something is bad. Discipline is, it's like they say, we don't show up 100% of ourselves every day. Discipline is the 1%. It's the 75% on other days. Other days you just come in at 30, but the consistency is that you got up and you put in the work.
You showed up.
Yes, you showed up. Discipline is also creating boundaries and saying no to things that do not fulfill you. So it beats talent. You can be so talented in life. If you lack discipline, the talent will be, we will override it because you don't have discipline. Consistency is the fact that those that are consistent, show up every day, are usually the lucky ones. You can engineer luck by just being consistent. If you're a writer, practicing reading more often, that 30 minutes of just reading a chapter of a book, that, you know, scripting of something, that refines your practice, and then you become talented.
Yeah.
I would love to piggyback off that if I can.
For sure.
Consistency, it also pairs with iteration. And, like, what I mean by iteration is that when you come back every time, you are assessing what could be better. Because if we do just the same thing over and over again, like, we will just get stuck. We will get creatively stuck. We won't grow or move. But if you come back and you look back and you see, what did I do yesterday that I could do better today? Maybe it's like you don't have the energy to do anything big, but what is, like, a small thing I can do that didn't work out yesterday? And a lot of the time it's like, I don't know what I could do better or worse. And so you have to try putting things in place that you can start measuring, like, what you did better or worse than last time. And so I love, Siki, that you said, like, consistency, and I completely agree with it. And I think on top of consistency, you also need to be able to iterate on what you've done before.
Wow, that is a powerful statement, because, like you said, when you're talented, everyone just praises you
yeah.
on how talented you are. Mm. But then if you don't back up that talent with showing up, I was reading an article of another business owner, but they run events. Mm. And they said they're having a challenge right now with specifically the amapiano artists. It's a genre. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I know amapiano.
Where there's a lot of these new guys coming into the industry, but they're not reliable.
Mm.
And so someone was complaining that why do they always book this yeah. one band or this one musician? And was like, but because they show up on
yes,
time,
we know.
They respect yeah. their set, they follow the rules, and we book them based on reliability and consistency mm. more than that mm. they are talented.
Yeah. Mm.
Whereas even if yeah. as talented as you are, but if you are missing yeah. engagements, if you're mm. not showing up on time, if you're not just putting in that yeah. extra effort of being consistent,
mm.
people start to think maybe you're not serious. Yeah. Maybe you're just doing this for fun and mm. this is a business. We're working.
Well, people can't take that risk.
Yeah. Yes.
Like if you're someone, an event organizer, and you paying someone to come and entertain people and they don't show up, like that's super risky for your yeah. business. And I think sometimes something really valuable to do is to put yourself in the shoes of the people that are like your client.
Yeah.
And imagine what it would feel like.
Yeah.
If, you know, you were organizing something and someone didn't pitch up on yeah. time.
Like and then you ran at a loss.
You know, and yeah. you ran at a loss or your reputation is on the line or whatever.
Yeah.
That thing of entitlement. Mm. Like people don't owe you something
yeah. Yeah.
just
yeah.
because you're young or just because you're talented. Yeah. It's like you've got to do all the other things as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For 30 years, the V&A Waterfront has been a champion of the arts. Our Immersive Artist Alliance program offers hands-on experience and skills development across various disciplines, including sculpture, videography, and music production. Exclusive networking events and creativity workshops also provide more opportunities for artists to connect, collaborate, and showcase their work. Sound like your kind of thing? Apply to join our vibrant community at the link in the show notes and join our WhatsApp community. We'd love to welcome you.
So you will have heard at the end of some of our episodes that we ask you to like and subscribe. The reason that we're doing that is because we would love you to be part of our growing Creative Allies community. And by liking and subscribing, it shows that you firstly like us, which is mm-hmm. good, right?
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very mm-hmm. good. I like to be liked. I like liking other people too.
There we go. And it also means that any new episodes or any new snippets will download to your phone immediately. So go on and hit that subscribe button.
Like, follow, share, subscribe, everything.
So in each episode, we have got a question from our Artist Alliance community. So these are questions that were asked at an event. And I have picked one, which I'm going to pose to both of you. So let's just do a quick fire round of answers. Mm-hmm. The question is, how do you deal with people wanting to underpay for your product or service?
Mm.
And I'm going to start with you, Rich.
Yeah, I think one of the things I was taught right in the beginning is work for full price or for free, but never for cheap.
Mm.
And so it takes a lot of courage to walk away from people who want to pay you cheap. But most of the time, those jobs won't be beneficial to you. You might be desperate for the money and it might be something that will be hard to walk away from, but you will be a better person having walked away from someone who undermines your own creativity and your own ability. Because the more you take on of those people who don't value your work, the more it kind of disintegrates your own creativity and your own personal being. And so don't be afraid to take the risk of walking away from someone who doesn't value your work.
Yeah, that's a great answer. You, Siki?
Jeez, I've been underpaid so many times that I've usually like sat in that cap where you can't break through. Firstly, I have done work for, you know, at a compromising price, at a low price, but that has given me access to a network, let's say, doing work for another agency who underpaid me and they were like walking our way with big chunks, but I was handling the client services, let's say.
Mm.
And then that person will remember the experience they had personally with me, the working experience, and they will call me on for another job, but on a bigger budget.
Mm.
So, yes, you can be underpaid, and sometimes just like the access to a wider network with new opportunities. I've also had to like be able to craft a polite no. So being able to turn down work because they then to set a boundary or set a precedent. Now they're like, oh, okay, this is how you actually deal with sickie. Next time I'm going to come back to her. So don't close the loop and be like, no, I don't like you. Let's, you know, it's more of, no, I can't take this job. But if other opportunities that are within the budget, I would be more than happy to work with you again.
That's that email lingo. You gotta
circling back.
Different language.
something that we've done quite a lot in the last couple of years is that, say someone wants an animation from us and they've got like a 20,000 rand budget in 2 days. And for us, it would be like, that's not enough money and not enough time for us to take on that job. We will usually reply going, this looks like such a fun, interesting project. We can do it in 5 days for 60,000 rand. And you put the ball back in their court, especially on the time side. Like if the budget's fine, but the time is like too tight for you to do proper creative work. Often if you just reply with how much time it actually will take, sometimes they're just like, oh, but that's perfect. I just thought it would take quicker. You know, no problem. You know, you can have 5 days instead of 2 days. So it's like it's always worth putting the ball back in their court. And if they say no, then it's sometimes, unless what Siki was saying, unless you're gaining something else, like gaining a network or gaining, be careful about the word exposure because people can manipulate and can trick you into
especially
thinking.
Especially younger.
They trick you into thinking this is going to be for a lot of exposure. And in reality, it's not. So be careful about when people say, but I'll give you a lot of exposure. And so, yeah, just put the ball back in their court. And if they say no, then walk away with your head held high.
And they also know how much to go work hard for so that they can afford you next time.
So honesty is the key.
Exactly.
Rather aim, my old boss used to say when we were pitching to clients, if our budget was maybe 1 million rand, she would say, ask for 3. Because even if they can't afford the 3, they'll probably go down to like a 2. Then you've still got more than what you actually need. So don't put the exact amount.
build in some buffer.
So we asked you to do a little project. We challenged you to be your own creative ally and write a letter to your younger self. What words or advice did you need to hear when you were at the beginning of your career? Let's start with you, Siki.
Jeez. I had to... Yeah, it's in a
for sure. We wouldn't expect any less.
That's fine. Like, we've had it in all forms.
Siki came with a laptop.
Yeah, Siki's here with a laptop. We've also had people writing letters, putting it in envelopes.
That was the sweetest.
That was very sweet. We've had people doing it on their phones. So yeah. I love that you asked for a word count,
yes,
by the way.
I had to ask for the word count. It's a little bit over, but not too over.
That's
the
absolutely fun.
Yeah.
I like to close my eyes for this section.
Yeah.
Jeez. Dear Siki, big personalities are not everybody's cup of tea, but don't let that silence your voice. It's okay to create from a place of limited resources. It's okay to start with what you have to create something unique. It's okay to come to the realization early on in your creative career that you're really unemployable. Your deep hunger for freedom, creative freedom, financial freedom, and location freedom is not a big ask to the capitalistic system you're operating in. You're not a brat for wanting to touch some grass outside, feel the ocean water, touch your toes, all while refueling your creative juices. You're not a brat for wanting longer lunch dates during office hours with your friends and family. It doesn't come from a place of privilege to want more from life. More experiences that enlighten you, more international exposure that shifts your perception of other cultures and informs your creative work. Surely you've clocked it by now. You won't find all this behind a desk in an office cubicle. Creativity is not done through desktop research. Creativity is done outside the confinements of your studios and offices. Thank you for documenting every piece of your work. Your journey reflects how growth is never linear. continue to build in public. There's relatability in your vulnerability. And remember this, everything that the sun touches is yours.
Wow.
I feel like a Simba moment there.
Yes.
All this land you see is yours. Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Suki. Yes, beautiful. Thank you. Richard, what are you saying to young Boland?
All right. Hi, Richard. Hope you're doing okay. You're probably working. That's okay. You don't have any major commitments, but you will soon one day. Don't give up on your ideas about making games and your own animation shows. Partner with people who can make that happen. Don't try to do everything yourself. Look after your mental health. Leave Facebook and social media while it's still good. It won't serve you that much in the future. Mm. Keep exercising and eating right. You don't know it yet, but you're also colorblind and have anxiety. The first 10 years of your studio will be easy, but it'll get harder after that. Mm. Your responsibilities will grow, not only for yourself, but for your business too. Going into business with your friends is the right choice, despite what you've been advised against. Mm. When AI grows and the economy shrinks, your role as a creative will shift.
Yeah.
Focus on making things that last a long time. Maybe focus on fewer things, but I know how much you like to spread your attention across many aspects of life. Be kind to yourself, continue to not take yourself too seriously, and keep making things and you'll be fine.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Thank you so, so much. Mm. What an insightful episode. I definitely am inspired to be more consistent and reach out to my accountant friends. I didn't know that.
And if you don't have any, make some. Yeah.
I'm currently looking for an auditor friend.
Taking applications, if you're listening.
Thank you so much for being an ally to Emerging Creatives. Thank you.
This was such a great conversation. Thank you, both of you.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this episode of Creative Allies, be sure to listen to the rest of the series. We speak with more incredible guests about their career experiences and challenges and give you valuable and practical advice to help shape your own. Please hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening to this. It helps us to keep doing what we're doing. Maybe even share this episode with a friend or your colleagues. Remember, you can join our WhatsApp channel or find out more about Artist Alliance on our website. Both links are in the show notes. You can also subscribe to the Artist Alliance newsletter to get the latest news. Thanks for listening. We look forward to next time.
We can't wait.
Oh my goodness.
Bye. Bye. The V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program created the series in partnership with Two Stories. Podcast production by Carol Williams, with audio editing and engineering by Rebecca Funsale and script writing by Linda Scarborough. The music for the series is composed by Jude Brown, and episodes are recorded at Sonic Nursery Sound Studios in Cape Town.